Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse number 9. I mentioned this. We used a very, very familiar verse in Sunday school hour. I'm going to do the same thing in Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse number 9. And this is what this whole message is about this morning. The thing that hath been, it is that which shall be. And that which is done is that which shall be done. There is no new thing under the sun. Now, let me ask you this. Do you really believe that? Because we got a lot of weird stuff going on right now. Do you really believe the Bible when it says there's no new thing under the sun? That's an important question to ask yourself, because a lot of people say they believe the Bible, but when it comes down to it, they're freaking out because of what's going on in this world. This is crazy times. Things are so bad. The Lord's coming back really, really soon. I want to bring a message this morning on the subject, the treasure of our perspective. God has given to us something wonderful. We overlook it. We overthink it. But God has given to us perspective. How to look at something and see it for what it is, stripping it of its fears. And God wants us this morning to have perspective. J. Frank Norris was a Southern Baptist preacher. He found himself at odds with the Southern Baptist Convention. The convention was drifting. This is back in the early 1900s, back in the 1930s, the time of the Depression. And the Southern Baptist Convention couldn't even figure out if social drinking was right or wrong. Norris didn't like that. He was not lined up with the Southern Baptist Convention. He did not want to go along with the drift. And so he was preaching practical things that were spiritual, scriptural, and that put him at odds with the Southern Baptist Convention. Years ago, Playboy magazine ran a survey to find out the best party schools in the country, which colleges would be the most fun to go to, and coming out on top was a Christian college. Mercer University is a Southern Baptist college, and they were ranked number one party school in the country. Back in 1939, it became obvious to J. Frank Norris that he was going to have to part company with the Southern Baptist Convention because they saw nothing wrong with what was going on. They were locked in with the world, and they were drifting as the world drifted. And so he decided what we need to do is we need to kind of create our own Bible college here instead of sending preacher boys off to Southern Baptist universities to be ruined. He said, I'd rather ruin them here. And so he started his own Bible college, and he got his preacher boys together, and he had three things that he was asking his preacher boys to become masters of. First of all, he said, you need a master, grab hold of it, dig into it, and that's the King James Bible. Unapologetic on the King James. You need to master the King James Bible. Second thing, you need to master the English language. You've got to learn how to communicate truth. This book is full of it. You've got to master the English language, use the right words to bring the people along to where they can understand what you're trying to convey to them. And the third thing that every preacher needs to master is history. And that raised some eyebrows because history, are you kidding me? Why do I need to know history? I'm going to be a preacher. I'm going to preach the Bible. Why do I need to know history? Well, who cares about Alexander the Great and what he did? Who cares about Napoleon or the Civil War? What does all that stuff matter? Well, that's where a lot of people miss the boat. And the reason is because when things start to happen and they don't understand it, they develop a spirit of fear. They're worried about the future. If things are messed up right now, what's going to happen in the future? This is the wonderful thing about history, because history gives us perspective. We are, history is a cycle. If you want to know what's going to happen in the future, read some history, because what happened, Solomon's telling us, there's no new thing under the sun. If you'd like to know where we're headed, you need to take a look and find out where we've been. Because this world is on a merry-go-round. It operates and functions in cycles, and history gives us perspective. The thing that hath been, it is that which shall be, and that which is done is that which shall be done, and there is no new thing under the sun. Look at verse number 10 now. Is there anything whereof it may be said, see, this is new? It hath been already of old time. The words old time is pointing to history. The Bible and history is all that we need. If you understand what is happening around the world in our country, all you have to do is study history, read the scriptures, and here's what you're going to discover. It's the same old routine, different singers, but the same song. We're just going in a circle. Many of you recall when COVID first appeared on the scene, a lot of social activists like Black Lives Matter and Antifa showed up out of nowhere, and they began dictating a cancel culture. Let's get rid of the statues. Why? Why were they deliberately trying to pull down the statues? If they once upon a time owned slaves, that became the criteria, and any historic figures that were slave owners, we need to get rid of them, pull the statues down. Robert E. Lee and the Southern generals in particular were easy targets. Then came George Washington. Let's erase him from the history books. And then came Abraham Lincoln, and he's the guy that set the slaves free, but let's get rid of him as well. Hot on the heels of this cancel culture was a brand new curriculum being inserted into schools, and the attempt was to rewrite American history from their vantage point. But why? I mean, there has to be a reason for what's going on. Why was there such an intense effort to rewrite history? The reason is because history provides perspective. And if you want to change how people view today, you have to first get rid of what happened yesterday and the day before. If you can cut our history loose from us, we're going to be like I was flying out of over the ocean. Which way do we go? I'm running out of time. I'm running out of fuel. I got to find a place to land. And this country can be adrift if, in fact, we can be separated from our Bibles, which is being taken over by the ESV and NIV, and that's the whole purpose, taking away that GPS that God has given to us. And then, on top of that, let's somehow get rid of our past. And that brings us back again to this hidden treasure that God has given to us, and that is a godly perspective. The world can bite their fingernails. They can get all in an uproar. They can be frightened and scared and worried about what in the world is going to take place. And God's people need to be the anchor in society because we should have the right perspective. Contrary to what many believe, the sky is not falling. If you remember the story about Chicken Little, Chicken Little was walking through the forest one day, an acorn fell and hit him on the head. He looked around to see who threw it at him. Didn't see anybody. He's looking around. What hit me on the head? And he had no idea. And he came to the conclusion all by himself, it must have been a piece of the sky. I can't believe it. The sky's falling. And so he gets in a panic and he starts heading off to the king because the king will know what to do. And then he comes upon one creature. Where are you headed? Well, I got hit on the head by the piece of the sky, and I'm going to the king because he'll know what to do. And he gathers himself a troop of animals, and then the last animal in the fable is a fox. And the fox says, where are you guys headed? Oh, we're going to the king. The king will know what to do. I got hit on the head by a chunk of sky. The sky is falling. And the fox says, well, come with me. I'll take you to the king. And he took him to his den and had Chicken Little and friends for dinner. Now that's what happens when you think the sky is falling. And the people who think that the sky is falling are the people who don't read their Bibles and they do not have a grasp on history. We're facing uncertain times. We're all on the same page with that. But the sky is not falling. And for that reason, and I don't mean to diminish this, but for that reason, a lot of people are thinking that the Lord is coming back right away. So did Paul. So did Paul. I'm not saying I'm not wanting the Lord to come back. I do want him to come back. But what if he doesn't? We still got a messed up world right now. And so let's get some perspective, because I know things in some areas are bad. Let's take a look at Esther chapter 4, if you would. The first thing we're going to tackle this morning is we have a problem with population control. In the book of Esther, there's an attempt made by Haman. He has a plan to wipe out every Jew in the kingdom of Persia. Haman had this satanic influence about him. And boy, I'll tell you, every once in a while, you may run across somebody, you don't know how in the world they have a following of evil, but they're like the Pied Piper, and people just, they're gravitating toward that person. That is satanic influence. And Haman had that. Hollywood celebrities, rock stars, they've got this satanic magnetism about them, and it just draws people that are clueless, they're evil. Esther heard the plan that she was supposed to go in and talk to the king. That'll fix the problem. Haman wants to kill everybody. Mordecai, her cousin, says, hey, I got a brilliant idea. How about if you go talk to the king? And she basically said, you need to find another plan. I'm not interested in that one. I don't like that one at all. And he told her, it just might be that you're here for this very reason. It just might be that you are part of the solution. In Esther chapter 4, verse 13, then Mordecai commanded to answer Esther, think not with thyself that thou shalt escape in the king's house more than all the Jews. For if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, then shall their enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place, but thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed. And who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? There are some who believe that much of what is taking place right now with the COVID vaccines is an attempt by somebody or some group to bring about the ability to weaken the immune system. I'm sure that some of you have heard these ideas. And by weakening the immune system, possibly there will be a decrease in the world's population. We're reading right now about athletes, professional athletes, 23 years old, they get a vaccine and all of a sudden they're dropping dead. New York Governor Cuomo got into trouble when he sent COVID-infected people back into the nursing homes, and some believe that he did so on purpose with the intent of spreading COVID in nursing homes. Those people were most vulnerable to it. They can die a whole lot easier, and therefore that's one way some were thinking of maybe cutting down on the population. The reason for some of the conspiracy theories is because Bill Gates and the Billionaires Club that meets in Davos, Switzerland, Every year they meet there to try to figure out ways to control the world's increasing population. The reason that they meet is not to figure out how to produce more food. What they're trying to accomplish is coming up with an idea of how to reduce the people who are eating their food. And so we're having a lot of people running around pointing to Bill Gates and George Soros and the millionaires, thinking that they're trying to take over the world by unleashing a series of pandemics to kill off millions of people. But while these people may or may not be involved in directly doing so, here's what I want you to remember. It's nothing new. I mean, it's nothing new. It took place in Esther's day, which was around 2,500 years ago. But it was only 70 years ago in 1942 that the Wannsee Conference met. There were 15 German officials who met together to develop what was called the Final Solution. Their goal was to exterminate 11 million Jews in Europe, and that was the plan. They had this idea, concentration camps. We'll force the Jews into them. And you know what? They failed. They only killed 6 million instead of 11 million. Have you heard that Iceland has discovered a plan for eliminating Down syndrome in their country? Boy, that's captured the attention of a lot of other nations. Can you imagine finding a cure for Down syndrome? That's fantastic. That's wonderful. A miracle drug that can cure Down syndrome. Well, they didn't say anything about a miracle drug. They didn't say anything about a cure. But they do have the lowest rate of Down syndrome births in their nation. In all the world, they have the lowest. Well, how'd they do that? Well, they give a screening to pregnant women, and that screening is supposed to be accurate in determining if there is a Down syndrome baby about to be born. And if that screening determines that you're going to give birth to a Down syndrome baby, 85% of the women who are counseled to have an abortion get one. There is no cure. They just abort the fetus. That's how they have the lowest birth rate of Down syndrome babies. Right now, 85% of the ladies or the women get an abortion. Their goal is 100%. Are you aware that one of the most effective ways back in the days of the cowboys and Indians in this country, one of the most effective ways of all of getting rid of the Indians? Smallpox. And whenever a settler died from smallpox, there were people that were taking their clothes and their blankets and handing them over to the Indians. And that is how so many thousands of Indians died by the hands of our ancestors. Three tribes were wiped out. You ever hear of the Mandans? The Arikara, the Hidatsa. Those three tribes had a combined population of 10,000 people. It was whittled down to only 160 survivors because of smallpox. You know what that was? Population control. There's nothing new. Ever hear of Margaret Sanger? She was a white woman who was truly a racist, and she came up with a plan of how to wipe out the black population in America. Her plan was called an abortion clinic. And the plan was, let's offer free abortions to the black pregnant women, and that'll be an easy way how to shrink their population and hopefully get rid of all of them. And where did they choose to place these abortion clinics at? In black neighborhoods. Population control. It's not something that's new. And how successful was her plan? It came to be known as Planned Parenthood, paid with our tax dollars. And that was nothing more than a racist plan to get rid of blacks in America. She was one of the worst racists of all time. And here's the success that she came up with. Black women right now have 5 times more abortions than white women. That's all it is. That's why a certain group wants to continue to push this thing, because it eliminates and decreases the population, especially of people of color. So what does all of this mean? Whether Bill Gates and the Billionaire Club are actually trying to kill off the world's population, that's not the point. The point is, there is nothing new under the sun. We're only seeing it better now, but it's always been there. We live in the age of intelligence, education, of knowledge. This stuff has always been going on. We're just now hearing about it for the first time in our lifetime. But there is nothing new under the sun. You know why? Because the devil's behind all of this stuff. And therefore, let's not get all worked up and excited, because you know what? Evil has been here for a long time. It's going to hang around for as long as it possibly can. There is nothing new under the sun. So let's get a perspective on this. Let's take our Bibles, turn to 1 Samuel chapter 29. I'll show you the verses in just a couple of seconds here. Second thing this morning is this: we have a problem today with the border crisis. When David was viewed as an outlaw and a threat to King Saul, you know what he did? He left Israel and he migrated to the land of the Philistines. They gave him Ziklag, and Ziklag was his headquarters, he and his 600 outlaw companions. And from Ziklag, he was giving the false impression that he was going out and making attacks against his fellow Jews. That's not what was happening. David was lying to the Philistine king through his teeth. That was nothing but a charade. And therefore, he kept up this charade for about 2 years, giving the impression, I'm loyal to the Philistines. I'm living in the land of the Philistines, and I'm loyal to you guys. But he wasn't. And then the Philistines were ready to make war against King Saul. David and his men show up. They're ready to go out and fight against Saul. And the Philistine king giving David a thumbs up because David's been loyal to him, or so he thought. But the Philistine lords wanted nothing to do with David. They looked at him and they saw a snake in the grass. We cannot trust him. He's living in our land, but he's not one of us. David was then told to leave. You're not welcome to be part of the Philistine army. We don't trust you. Go back to where you came from. 1 Samuel 29, verse number 1. Now the Philistines gathered together all their armies to Aphek, and the Israelites pitched by a fountain which is in Jezreel. And the lords of the Philistines passed on by hundreds and by thousands, but David and his men passed on in the rearward with Achish. Then said the princes of the Philistines, "What do these Hebrews here?" And Achish said unto the princes of the Philistines, "Is not this David, the servant of Saul, the king of Israel, which hath been with me these days or these years? And I have found no fault in him since he fell unto me unto this day." And the princes of the Philistines were wroth with him, and the prince of the Philistines said unto him, "Make this fellow return, that he may go again to his place which thou hast appointed him, and let him not go down with us to battle, lest in the battle he be an adversary to us. For wherewith should he reconcile himself unto his master? Should it not be with the heads of these men?" At this point in time, David is at his low spiritual point. He's been called out by these Philistine lords as being untrustworthy. And you know what? He was. You couldn't trust this guy. He was lying to the king as to what he was up to. And to make sure that nobody found out, David and his men, they would attack a village, and then David's order was no survivors, no witnesses. Kill everybody. And that is what he was up to that the Philistines did not know. He was, in today's terminology, a threat to national security. He was not a Philistine. He was never intending to become a Philistine. He would never have taken up arms against King Saul, and he actually was a threat to a foreign king that was gullible enough to believe him. So what was the solution? David, you need to go back home. We don't want you in this country. You're not one of us. You're not on our side. In looking at another scenario concerning Ruth, who was from Moab, she was welcomed into Israel only because she had converted to the Jewish faith. She had gotten rid of her Moabite gods. She accepted Naomi's God, Jehovah God, and she was welcomed as a Jew back in Israel. So why the difference? David was living with the Philistines. They didn't want him. Ruth was living with the Jews. They were welcoming her. What was the difference? Ruth was willing to cut all ties with Moab, including their religion. She was willing to become a full-fledged Jew, including the adoption of Jewish customs. And David was not. It's called, and this is huge, this is the reason we have a problem with immigration in this country. It's called assimilation. You know what? Back in the 1900s, when people, a lot of people from Europe coming to America, if you've ever heard of the baseball New York Yankees, Lou Gehrig, his parents were German. They came from Germany. They spoke German, and they spoke broken English, and they made sure that Lou Gehrig did not ever speak German. They refused to speak German in the house because they wanted their son to grow up to become an American. They wanted him to be assimilated. That's our flag. These are our customs. This is our language. And if you want to live here, be willing to assimilate. That's all any country should ever ask for. For the past 2 years, we have witnessed the total disregard by President Biden and his administration of the laws of immigration by creating open borders. What's wrong with that idea? I mean, what's wrong with having borders? Well, let me ask you this. If you own your house, do you have property lines? When you bought your house, did it not spell out exactly where the boundary was? You can hire a surveyor. They will find exactly where those stakes are or where they ought to be. They'll drive new stakes down. And the reason is because if you buy something, you expect a house to have property boundaries. And if somebody comes onto your property and you don't want them there or they're a threat, you know what you get to do? You get to put a no trespass order on them, and they are not allowed on your property anymore. Well, if we can do that as a homeowner, why can't we do that as a nation? So that we can protect our property. In order for immigration, a policy to work, one thing is required: assimilation. David was not willing to do that. He would never turn his back on his Jewish heritage. He would never turn his back on King Saul. He was a Jew, and he would be for all of his life. He was never going to become a Philistine. And because of that, they wisely told David, go back where you came from, because you're not one of us. Turn, if you would, to Genesis chapter 14, verse 14. And again, can we not solve problems by looking back historically and looking at the Bible to find out how things worked out in the past and help ourselves out a little bit? Genesis chapter 14, I'll show you the verse in just a second. Third thing this morning is this. We have a problem today with a military crisis. In order to get some biblical perspective on a fighting military unit, all you have to do, it's called the law of first mention, a great Bible study tool. If you want to find out how God really feels about something, locate, find in the Bible where that word first appears, track it down, read over that passage, and you'll get a very good glimpse as to how God feels about that. Applying that rule to the word war brings you to the very first time war is found in the Bible, which happens to be Genesis chapter 14. In this chapter, it tells of two great confederacies that are going to war against each other. There's a four-nation confederacy, and there's a five-nation confederacy that included Sodom and Gomorrah. So you got Sodom and Gomorrah and their outfit, and then you have four kings over here with those two armies fought against one another, and the Sodom and Gomorrah confederacy lost, and in the process, Lot was taken captive. As soon as Abraham learned that Lot was taken, he gathered his army of 318 trained servants. He led these servants to fight a battle against that four-king confederacy that just wiped out the other side. And the amazing thing is that Abraham and his 318 trained servants won the battle. Genesis 14, verse 14. And when Abram heard that his brother was taken captive, he armed his trained servants, born in his own house, 318, and pursued them unto Dan. And he divided himself against them, he and his servants, by night, and smote them and pursued them unto Hobah, which is on the left hand of Damascus. And he brought back all the goods and also brought again his brother Lot and his goods and the women also and the people. So what we find here is Abraham's army of 318 servants defeated an army that was composed of four different nations, and that was something that's impressive. But the question is, what does that have to do with our current military? Unfortunately, the answer is not much, because our military is nothing like Abraham and his 318 trained servants. Our military right now is more like that gigantic, massive four-nation confederacy that got beat up bad by a very small army. So is there really anything new about an oversized army being defeated by a handful of nobodies? Well, the answer can best be seen by looking at what happened in Afghanistan when we decided to withdraw from that country. Listen to these shocking and tragic numbers of what really took place at the evacuation in Afghanistan that just took place recently. While the Biden administration, they were bragging about, they evacuated 124,000 people from Afghanistan, and they got the cheerleaders going, oh, this is wonderful. When have you ever seen an evacuation like that? 124,000 people. What they did not tell you was only 6,000 were Americans. We evacuated the wrong group. And while the Biden administration was telling the American people that there were only between 100 and 150 Americans who were left behind and they kind of wanted to stay behind, the truth of the matter is more than 9,000 Americans were left behind. And the truth is we truly have a serious problem in our military. We have some of the best trained warriors in the world, and yet we have the highest ranking idiots in the world who are in charge of them, including the commander in chief. So what is our problem in the military? Well, Lee Robertson said this over and over and over again, everything rises and falls on leadership. And that is exactly what's wrong with our military. We have great weapons and technology. We have the best that the Chinese can steal. We have a lot of men and women who are patriots and committed to serving this country, but we have a lack of leadership who put their skills on display with the evacuation in Afghanistan, and they were clueless as to what was going to happen. They didn't see anything coming, and their decision ended up leaving 9,000 Americans behind in enemy territory. Where did these military leaders come from? They were the leftovers of a great purge that took place in our military because some of the best people were forced out and some of the worst people were promoted to make the decisions that are now disastrous. Let's take a look at Leviticus chapter 7, if you would, verse number 16. Next issue that we have going on right now, and let's do this. Let's look at the Bible. Let's look back historically and put this in perspective because we have a problem with a pandemic crisis. In the book of Leviticus, God chose to mandate certain things by distinguishing them as either being clean or unclean. And we're all familiar. Boy, one of the hardest books in the world to read through is the book of Leviticus. It's talking about, don't eat these creepy, crawly things over here. And okay, you can eat this thing over here, but don't even think about that over there. And so all of these dietary laws were put in place. And truthfully, it helped God's people. You know, when the bubonic plague was spreading throughout Europe and millions of people were dying, the Jews were remaining healthy, and they were largely unaffected by the plague, and they were being blamed for the plague because hardly any of them were getting sick. You know why they were not getting sick? Leviticus, God's dietary laws. They were not eating certain things that were a little bit iffy and risky. The rest of the population were, and they had a lot of parasites in their bodies. The plague just hit them and wiped them out. So God created some laws here. And one problem that they had back then, there was no refrigeration. So let's take a look at Leviticus 7, verse 16. But if the sacrifice of his offering be a vow or a voluntary offering, it shall be eaten the same day that he offereth his sacrifice, and on the morrow also the remainder of it shall be eaten. But the remainder of the flesh of the sacrifice on the third day shall be burnt with fire. What's that all about? God's simply saying, you know what? You can't let food sit around. It's going to start walking and mooing again, you know. Don't eat that stuff, you know. No refrigeration. Well, how do you explain refrigeration? You don't bother. You just make a rule. Hey, if that food's been sitting there third day, throw it out. Don't leave it in the fridge and turn green and stuff, you know, like that. You don't have the capability. Don't let it set. And believe me, you'll be healthier for it. Another problem that they had back then, certain animals were unhealthy. They were kind of risky. Leviticus 11, verse 7, and the swine, though he divide the hoof and be cloven-footed, yet he cheweth not the cud, he is unclean to you. And again, God is giving healthful rules. And so what he was telling the Jews, look, there's a difference between a cow and a pig or a sheep and a pig. Cattle and sheep, they have multiple stomachs. They can digest the food a whole lot better, and therefore they don't have as many of the issues as the hogs did. A pig only has one stomach. It digests the food in 4 hours, and it's a scavenger. It'll eat anything and everything, including people. And so God said, you know what? You don't have the ability to make crispy bacon on a George Foreman grill right now. And you don't have the ability to slow cook that pork, to have pulled pork. And so back in those days, You better stay away from it. Got a lot of toxins. You don't have the technology yet to eat that safely. So what exactly is our problem with these forced compliances that were being thrown around so gleefully and enforced? Mask, do this, you got to get the vaccine and all that. The CDC was recently slapped for exceeding their authority because they was making up rules, and finally somebody said, hey, you're not allowed to do that. Studies have since been conducted and proven that wearing a mask was totally incapable of protecting somebody from getting COVID. Lawsuits have been launched by airline workers, the pilots, because mask mandates were forced upon them. But why mandate masks when many knew that they were useless? In 1939, Nazi Germany began making plans to begin a purge of all Jews. They wanted to control them. They came up with a visual ID, that yellow star. They forced them to wear that with the idea not only to identify them so that they could kill them faster, but also to make them feel inferior. They're nothing. And that was the beginning of a systematic plan to gain their compliance, which eventually led into to the concentration camps and then the gas showers and then the ovens, all with only one notable uprising. And consider this. When they were identified and made to feel inferior, and they were told, go here, do this, you go that way, you go that way. The amazing thing is, 6 million Jews were killed, only one uprising. Only one. And that was only because there were Russian soldiers in that same concentration camp. I believe it was Sobibor. Only one uprising. Did the Star of David emblem help to subdue the Jews and render them harmless? A very interesting trick, it's used by professional dog trainers. If they have a dog with an attitude who likes to show its teeth, and that alpha dog, it's called a muzzle. And when they would put a muzzle on one of these dogs, that dog immediately became subdued. Dog trainers know about it. And I think we're going to find in years to come, masks did a whole lot more damage than good. Was the masking of America part of a diabolical plan meant to subdue us, people who liked to ask questions or wanted answers and accountability? I don't know. But one thing I do know is there is nothing new under the sun. Nothing, the Bible tells us. And there is something that is worse than losing our health, and that is losing our freedom. Let's bow for prayer. Father, please bless our folks here this morning. We ask, Lord, that you'd help us never forget, as surely as the sun rises in the east, sets in the west, the sun is always there, and the Bible is even more on time, more predictable. Holy Spirit, help us to become students of the Bible. Help us to become students of history. For if there is nothing new under the sun, we really don't have a whole lot to worry about because you are still in control.